Hello, Mind Bloomers. This is Mind Bloom, the safe space at the intersection of mental health advocacy and breast cancer awareness. Mind Bloom is your podcast. Come back weekly and listen to my guests as they reflect on their close encounters with emotional disorders and breast cancer. Not an easy task, but we promise to make your mind bloom. Hello, Mind Bloomers. This is Marina G, your host, and this is Mind Bloom. Please remember, the content provided by Mind Bloom is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking medical treatment because of any content referenced or authored by Mind Bloom You. Hi guys, hello, hello, and welcome to episode 44 of Mind Bloom. It's such a pleasure to have you. It's such a pleasure and a blessing to be here again, another Monday, another Tuesday when the episode comes out. We're taping live, as always, live on Instagram, 1:30 Eastern Time every Monday. And the episode itself comes out every Tuesday on your platform of your choice. It's so good to be here with you. It's a beautiful day. It's very sunny in New York City. It's a bit cold. We're back again to the 30s. And I'm sure you in Atlanta are having a blast. It must be warm and nice. And I'm a little bit jealous of that. But it's regardless, it's a beautiful day here. It's Monday and it's that day of setting up intentions for the week. Hi, Garima. It's that day of setting up intentions for the week and goals, even if they're micro goals. It doesn't have to be, my gosh, this week I'm going to start my business. I'm going to found a podcast. I'm going to start a nonprofit. Doesn't have to be like that. It could just be put on your running shoes and go around the block for a walk or for a short run. If exercise is something that, you know, triggers you and makes you feel, oh, I got to do this. I have to, but I don't want to. Or what else? Let me see. If you have to meal prep for the week, well, maybe cut yourself some slack and meal prep only through Wednesday, perhaps. So my idea is really just micro baby steps. Not even baby steps. We're talking about like still in the womb baby steps. Let's not put ourselves under pressure. Let's not tell ourselves what to do, how you have to do, you have this. Turn off a couple of notifications on your phone. Maybe there's way too many and they're just triggering you, distracting you, and not letting you achieve that intention you set for your day or for your week. So these are just a couple of tips, things I deal with myself as well. It's all a matter of prioritizing. Let's see, Garima, what you wrote. I'm starting working out this week. There you go. It's amazing. Here in India, it's almost midnight and starting Tuesday. So did my first one-day workout, my first one workout. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I'm so, so proud of you. Let's think of tomorrow, and tomorrow in India is Wednesday. So let's think about only tomorrow. And then after tomorrow, let's think about Thursday. And then after Thursday is complete, let's talk and think about Friday. Because in my experience, what happens is I'm already on Friday in my mind. I'm already, oh my gosh, I have to get these five workouts in no matter what. And sometimes, especially when you're just starting to work out, you're going to be sore. So give yourself grace, give yourself patience and time. And if you fall off the wagon, come back again. Don't give up. I know it's hard. I do it too, and I've done it too. You're just like, I'm not made for this. This is not for me. Whether it's, of course, working out, baking, or gardening, or starting your own podcast. This is not for me. I had only 3 likes on Instagram. I'm done. This is not for me. Nope. Push. Keep on pushing. Keep on showing up. And the results will show. And the results, by results, I don't mean money coming in or a huge following coming in or, you know, fame and success, however we imagine those. It could just be little ripples, little consequences, little things. You're going to start feeling better about yourself. That's huge, probably bigger than fame and success. You're going to be raising up your chin and you're going to be like, I can do this. Heck, I can do this. And I'm going to show up again next week or tomorrow, whatever your goal is. So that is just my very basic, candid, personal take on tackling the intentions for the week and the goals for the week, for the day, for the morning. We can break things down into pieces of 30 minutes or 1 hour. Yeah? What am I going to do the next hour? I am going to put the dishes in the sink. That's it. If I can do that, yay to me. And then a little reward, which could be, all right, let me go take a peek on social media since this is, you know, what really gives me pleasure. I wanted to talk to you about some other things. One of them is huge, actually, to me. I wanted to tell you that now there's names, there's everything. I got everything, a big plan. I got everything worked out and lined out. So the big novelty is that the Blooming Academy is now a thing. It started. It's open for everyone. And it's now this big project of mine of Mind Bloom being a podcast and being, you know, the social media adjacent to the podcast. Well, now I am taking one step further ahead and I've created a school, a group, something I call an orchard, where we can grow together, where we can plant seeds of courage, especially in adversity. And by adversity, I mean mostly breast cancer. It doesn't have to be you impacted by breast cancer, but it could be someone in your family. So you could be a caregiver, you could be a doctor. So it's a school, it's an academy, that's why I called it an academy, where we'll come together and work on ways to grow you, to grow together. So it's called the Blooming Academy because of that. We're going to be planting seeds, and that's why I have the very one first. That's where we start our work, with a seeding session where we're going to be planting seeds together. And your goal can be very different. It could be you want more, a bigger following on Instagram because you're telling a story that matters, which is resilience and courage in or through breast cancer or mental illness. And you want to tell that story, but you're having a little bit of trouble getting visible. So what we're going to do is work together. Establish a goal. Where do you want to be in a month? Where do you want to be in 6 months? And grow from there. Create a little GPS, a roadmap for you to get from point A to point B. Then there's the Sprouting Lab. The Sprouting Session. So it's a group platform. It's the group platform. It's where we're going to be working on a weekly basis, but month by month by month on our goals. Do you want to start a podcast and you don't know where to start from? Do you want to increase your visibility on Instagram? Do you want to host a room on Clubhouse? And it's you know, you don't really know what to make of it. And then it could be things like, do you want to start your own company? Go solo? Do you want to quit your job? I didn't say this, but do you want to quit your job and move on to solo entrepreneurship? Well, we're going to work on those things together. Group membership, monthly membership with weekly meetings and trainings and guests to talk to you about how to grow, how to get better. We've planted the seeds of courage, and now we are going to start sprouting. That is the Sprouting Lab. And as the name, I think the name is very self-explanatory. It's very hands-on. You're going to be doing it. I'm not going to be sitting there and lecturing you. You have homework. You're going to be doing things with deadlines and peer review and just peer help and support. And then there's the Bloom Method. With the Bloom Method, we're going to be working one-on-one. So we've established your roadmap. We know where you want to get, but we're going to be working one-on-one. I will be all yours. You'll have my phone number. You will meet weekly on Zoom. We'll have a brunch on Fridays. I got it all lined out. We're going to have a brunch on Fridays. Of course, it has to be virtual for now, but it's, you know, everything and all the things are going to happen in the Blooming Academy within Mind Bloom. You in the Blooming Academy can be a guest on my podcast. We can do lives together. We can host rooms together on Clubhouse. Anything can happen. And this is, you know, about us growing together. I'm not going to be coaching you. I'm not going to be telling you what to do. That is not who I am. We are going to be holding hands and growing and sprouting and then blooming. So that's the path. We plant a seed, the seeding session, and then we work together if that's what we want to do in the Sprouting Lab. And then if you want further hand-holding, we can do the Bloom Method. So let me know. I have some comments from you here. Oh, this sounds fabulous. Good luck to you. I'll keep following your page. Thank you so much, the Mad Moon. Me as well. I'll do the same with you. And stop by anytime. The Blooming Academy, you can find it on my website, mindbloomyou.com. You can find it, obviously, here on Instagram at mindbloomyou, on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok, mindbloomyou. And what else? Oh, and on Clubhouse, obviously, I founded today the club, Blooming Academy. So for all the women impacted by breast cancer, and again, I want to reiterate this idea. It's not that you have to have breast cancer, but perhaps you are at high risk of breast cancer. You, your mother, your sister-in-law, your mother-in-law have been impacted and have had a diagnosis. And you're struggling with that as a caregiver. So join me. Come join me wherever I can be found, which is pretty much everywhere. And if you live in Brooklyn, we can also grab a coffee. And I am so excited to be sharing this with you. So I will see you next week, same time, same day, Mondays. I record live the Mind Bloom episode, Mondays 1:30 Eastern Time. And the episode comes out on Tuesday, first thing in the morning for your breakfast. You can have breakfast with Mind Bloom. All right, guys, I will see you soon. Have a beautiful Monday, a beautiful week, and
Hello, Dr. Alexia. How are you? It's a pleasure to have you on Mind Blown.
I am wonderful, and thank you so much for inviting me on to share my story. I'm so grateful for you inviting me to your platform today.
No, I am grateful and honored. You're a hero. Oh my gosh, for all standards, you're a hero. You've been spreading the word. You've been fighting your own good fight as well. Mm-hmm. And that has not stopped you from educating others and uplifting and advocating for others' health as well. That's tremendous.
Thank you so much.
I believe that comes with the vows you took as well to protect lives and to save lives. So tell us a little bit about you. What do you do, and what brings you here to Mind Blown?
So I am Dr. Alexia. I am a triple board certified infectious disease physician. I am a mom, a speaker, an author, an advocate, and a cancer wellness coach. And all of that other stuff, which is so important to me, came out of being diagnosed with stage 3 breast. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 37. I had a large tumor in my right breast with significant lymph node involvement, and was found to have also a small tumor in my left breast after I underwent bilateral mastectomies. I always tell people that my breast cancer diagnosis was 2 years in the making, and I was known to be high risk, yet I received, disparate care, really. And only after I was diagnosed with breast cancer was I diagnosed with a genetic mutation. I'm a PALB2 genetic mutant that increases my risk for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer. And I have an ATM gene variant of undetermined clinical significance, excuse me. As a physician who is very passionate about educating my own patients and educating my community for things that we're at high risk for, when I got thrust into the breast cancer community and began to understand even more about risk factors for Black women, Latino women, and other women of color, and, just based on my own experience navigating the healthcare system, I thought, my God, like, if this could happen to me, what is happening to women who look like me, who aren't physicians, who aren't healthcare professionals, who aren't going to, university medical centers and being taken care of by people who they know and, hold them in a particular regard. And, so I began to share my story. And as I was sharing my story, as well as looking for information about what I was about to experience, I noticed two things. I noticed that there was a lack of representation for Black women. So, like, wanting to know what my mastectomy scars might look like, I couldn't find imagery of that. And then I noticed there was a lot of misinformation, or like a lot of half truths being put out there. And so my concern is, we're already underserved, we're already at a disadvantage. And because we may not be getting our questions answered in the healthcare setting, if we're turning to social media, if we're turning to, different groups and organizations, if we're being faced with misinformation, or information was not representative of and not applicable to Black women. And so I really made a conscious effort to share my experience in real time and make sure that I was educating women in my community along the way. And granted, other women definitely benefit from what I have to say and what I have to share. And I want everybody to benefit, but because we have not been represented, especially young women, I really made it my mission to make sure that we were educated, that we were prepared to advocate for ourselves, so that when we go into healthcare systems that don't understand why the rules don't always apply to us, or why, you have to really manipulate the standard of care in order to best take care of us, you know, I just used all of that to be a stand for changing that 40% disparity in our outcomes as it relates to breast cancer. And so many things have happened along the way. And so as I've been going through the cancer treatment process and, you know, the survivorship process, I'm learning more and I'm just taking a stand to educate others and just really bring other women along the way with me.
Yeah, I saw your post yesterday on, I believe yesterday on Instagram about that 40% disparity. Yeah. I myself post that all the time as well. It's not enough. You have to keep repeating it and saying it out loud. Yeah. Somehow there's still the idea. And I think it's natural because it's a difficult topic, obviously, mm-hmm. but if we all read that and we still have the idea that, you know, it's okay, 40%, but it's not going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And you can never say enough, do your mammograms, do your follow-ups. If you're not under the age of a mammogram yet, self-advocate if you do feel something or yeah. something is up. Please say to everyone, for everyone to hear here again, mm-hmm. what is that 40%? What is that disparity? What are we talking about? Is it just, but is it just diagnoses? Is it also the outcome? So the survivorship and the mortality rates, what does this involve? And what are we talking about?
So Black women are 40%, 40 to 42% more likely to die of breast cancer compared to our white counterparts. And that is regardless of age, regardless of stage of diagnosis. It takes into consideration all of those things. And even though we've had so many advances in breast cancer diagnosis and breast cancer treatment, the disparities have actually increased over time. So years ago, when they started recording this kind of data, it was low as 10 to 12%. And then that disparity gap has sort of widened over the decades. And, you know, sadly, it also is variable from place to place. So what city you live in, what types of cancer care centers you have access to, is it an accredited cancer institution or a university hospital? Do you have access to research or not? And all of these things play a role. So across the board, there's this 40% disparity that Black women are more likely to get more likely to die from a cancer diagnosis. And there's several reasons that occurs. And when I, you know, look at all these different, you know, large cancer institutions, they all have the same data on their websites. They all say it's related to education, it's related to socioeconomic status, all of these things. But what it boils down to is that Black women get diagnosed with breast cancer younger. We often get diagnosed with more aggressive breast cancers, like we're more likely to be triple negative. And we're really underdiagnosed for genetic mutations. And we know that understanding genetic predispositions for cancer can sort of guide and direct care. And so there's all of these things that end up being missed in terms of diagnosing us and caring for us. We're less likely to be offered genetic testing. And so that is an issue because that may change or affect a Black woman's outcomes. Our family history is less likely to be known and understood. And that boils down to just, you know, historical and present day racism in this country. We've not had access to healthcare historically in this country. And then when we have, it's been disparate. And so if you ask, you know, a Black or Latino woman, or possibly even an Indigenous woman about their family medical history, they may not know what somebody's primary cancer was. They may just know that, you know, some of their family members died of cancer. And so then we're told, well, we don't meet criteria for genetic testing or for early screening and things like that. So the NCCN guidelines have had to go as far as to say that if you have a Black patient who has cancer, you need to offer them genetic testing and counseling, because using his family history and other criteria, many of us have been missed. And the same thing happened to me. I was told that I did not have a significant enough family history of breast cancer to be offered genetic testing, but I have a strong family history of prostate cancer. My grandfather died of aggressive prostate cancer. My father had prostate cancer. And that actually was enough to get me tested. But it wasn't done until after I had breast cancer. And so if I, as a physician, had this outcome, because I, at the time, just didn't advocate for myself. I said, these are my doctors. They're the experts. This is not my specialty. I'm going to trust them. I'm going to stay in my lane and do what my doctors tell me to do. And for me, I ended up with a cancer diagnosis that I didn't have to have. I was denied a prophylactic mastectomy that I asked for. Because I was told it was too radical. And, you know, my stance and what I say when I'm speaking to physician groups, when I'm advocating for Black women who experience breast and other cancers, I say there's nothing that is too radical for a group of women who are 40% more likely to die than the rest of your patients, right? How can you say that any intervention, any screening, any protocol is too radical if someone is 40% more likely to die? Mm-hmm. So there's just so many levels and layers to why this occurs. It's yes, there's a lack of education, but it's not how educated the patient is or isn't, because having a medical doctorate didn't change my outcome. So we have to stop blaming patients that they're not educated enough to survive cancer. You know, our healthcare providers need to be educated and need to be more culturally competent and need to be more thoughtful and considerate about the group of people that they're taking care of and how they apply the medicine to individual patients or individual groups. You know, if there's a lack of education, it's that. We can't just blame patients' level of education for their outcomes, because it has almost no impact when you talk about the education differences in white women. So we know that that's not what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And then there's other factors, environmental factors. There, you know, where does someone live, right? Do they live in a food desert? You know, what kind of food, what quality of food is being sold in their community? Because we know diet plays a role in risk for cancer. But so many people are told when they get a cancer diagnosis and when they start chemotherapy and radiation, eat whatever you want, eat whatever you can get in. And, you know, they're told not to eat, you know, certain foods, don't eat raw fruits or, you know, raw veggies, or don't eat, you know, fruits that don't have a skin or a rind when they're on chemo. But patients shouldn't be told that. They should be told how to prepare and handle the food to decrease the risk of infection. So, you know, I know cancer patients who are in the midst of chemotherapy and they're eating like McDonald's burgers, fries, mm-hmm. and milkshakes mm-hmm. because it's cooked. It's not raw. You know, it's not a food that's going to place them at high risk for infection, but we shouldn't be eating like that during chemo. So it's this kinds of things and so many other layers, you know, this idea that, you know, Black women or Black people are poor historians. And so the complaints we report aren't taken seriously and not acted upon. So there's just so, I could go on indefinitely. We could take the whole podcast talking about this thing, but there's certainly more opportunities and, you know, more time to share about those things.
Mm-mm. So basically, thousands of lives could be saved.
Yeah, if we educate people, if we help people understand their own risk and how lifestyle can play a role and change outcomes. You know, if we encourage and educate people about the importance of treatment, you know how many people, you know, don't go through cancer treatment because they're afraid of what chemo is going to do to them. And they've never talked to another person to really understand, you know, how, what cancer treatment can look like, or understand that it's not as hard or barbaric as it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. You know, people don't go into treatment because they're afraid of how sick they might be, not having any understanding of how amazing, you know, cancer treatment has, the evolution of cancer treatment and how patients can be supported, how amazing and effective some of these medicines are, that, you know, nausea can really be limited, that you can go back to your cancer center and get hydration, for example. And we just don't know. And, you know, what we don't know can really kill us. So people, you know, run away from treatment just out of, you know, or fear of pain. And so even just the proper education of that, and just having providers who are committed to bring people back who are, you know, falling out of care, who are missing appointments, who didn't show up for chemo, like encouraging them to get back on course.
Would healthcare costs play a role in it as well?
Absolutely. Healthcare costs definitely play a role in people not being able to pursue cancer treatment, like being afraid of the mounting cost, as well as the treatment putting them out of work. So if you are, you know, a mother or a grandmother, and you're the sole provider for your children or your grandchildren, which can be the case, especially in our communities, you know, that can make women put off care or not go into treatment altogether. But they need to have the conversation, because, you know, I talked to my doctor and I talked about working through treatment. And, you know, in the beginning, she was like, well, let's see how it goes. Let's see how you do. We can schedule your work schedule so that, you know, you get your initial treatment and you'll likely be okay for 48 to 72 hours after chemo, because of how long some of these preventative anti-nausea, anti-vomiting medicines and the steroids work in your system, and then they'll sort of wear off. So my chemos were usually on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, with the goal of me being able to work Thursday and Friday, and then kind of go through the roughest patch on the weekend when I didn't have to work. And, you know, that worked actually for a while. I actually had to leave work for like chemo brain, and because my white counts were so low, before, you know, things got too crazy. But like, I didn't have to not work because of nausea or vomiting or profound fatigue in the beginning. So what she said was true, and we were able to work that out. But it's so important for patients to have that conversation with their providers, as well as with someone who's had this lived experience. You know, if you're a mom and you have children at home, talk to another mom who's gone through cancer and see how she managed, you know, raising a child, especially if it's a school-aged child or a small child. Like, see how that woman navigated going through cancer treatment while having small children and, you know, doing homework and work and all of those things before you just deny your treatment and say, no, I can't. I have too much on my plate. I have children to take care of. I have bills to pay. I got to work, et cetera. And explore resources. There are so many financial resources out there that we just don't tap into. And we have to, you know, in that regard, release pride, you know, release this fear of being stigmatized, and just, you know, go after what's available. I was someone who, as a physician, I was very resistant and very prideful about, you know, not applying for certain programs. And like, I remember my cousin set up a GoFundMe for me, and she was like, you should fill in this thing and activate the account. And my pride would not let me do that. And what we have to remember is that people have a choice to give, whether they're giving directly to us or they're giving to, you know, organizations that provide financial resources, big, small, and everything in between. People choose to give out of the kindness of their heart. And we should not let pride or stigma or anything else get in the way of us being vulnerable enough to help ourselves out and to give ourselves a break. You know, vulnerability is huge. It will carry you far, far, far in the cancer treatment journey. I'm such a stand for saying yes to help, I'm such a stan for being receptive to what other people may have to offer you, big or small, when you're going through cancer treatment, and just letting go of that pride. You know, cancer can financially devastate people. And yet again, Black women are disproportionately impacted in a negative way by the financial burdens of breast cancer. And breast cancer is one of the most financially burdening cancer diagnoses there are. And so, you know, just see what resources are out there. Even if you have to work, there's resources to pay your rent or your mortgage, resources to pay for transportation to and from your appointments, resources to pay your utilities, you know, donation of grocery store coupons. You know, my community was incredible. They set up a meal train and people would sign up on a calendar to prepare lunch or dinner for my family, or, you know, drop off a gift card so we could order food. And that was such an amazing resource. And so, you know, rely on your community. When people say, what do you need? Say, I need a meal train. What do you need? I need grocery store gift cards. I need my electric bill paid. I need my rent paid. You know, my fellow physicians, women physicians got together. I had no idea they were doing this. They collected money for me. And it was like a mortgage payment and a half. And that was so huge, because I lost my income. I lost my ability to work and be generative. And the fear of not being able to pay bills costs women their lives every single day, every single month, every single year. And, you know, that disproportionately impacts Black and brown women, Latino women. And so I never want to see that. So if it takes for me to say, even as a physician, I struggled financially, you know, that the things that I had set in place, like disability insurance, weren't enough to cover my bills. But I was ultimately became vulnerable enough to ask for the help. So that, you know, a year, 2 years, almost 3 years later, I'm still in my home that I worked so hard for that I could have lost to cancer, you know? So when you talk about, you know, all of the things that we're up against, you know, especially with breast cancer, you lose your breasts. Some of us lose our ovaries, you lose your hair, you lose your independence, you lose your financial well-being, and then things like your home, your transportation, all of this stuff is at stake. I really want to encourage women to be vulnerable, to ask for help, seek help, and accept help. Because we as a community, we don't do that.
I see.
We don't do that.
I see. I love this raw description you just gave, because, you know, we talk about cancer, breast cancer in particular, mm-hmm. and we're, oh my gosh, the chemo. Oh my gosh, the loss of hair. Mm-hmm. But it's this whole disruption and interference of your life. Everything. Yeah. You have to tell your kids or choose not to tell. You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many. The grief, the loss, and you mentioned counseling as well, you know, it being available to women going through breast cancer.
Yeah.
All the areas in our lives are transformed and just disrupted, and so much more if, yes, like you're saying, you're a single mom or help with your electric bill or oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. Yes, thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah,
it's definitely areas you don't talk about.
Yeah, and I think because people aren't talking about it, nobody thinks to ask. And certainly, you know, as a physician, I'm like, I want women to advocate for themselves, but I also want us to be reasonable and realistic about what it is our physicians can and are supposed to do for us. And so your physician's not going to think of that, but ask to speak with a social worker at the cancer center, regardless of what your financial abilities are, because I'll tell you, I had that 6 months of money saved, you know, that everybody tells you to save, that emergency fund that you're supposed to have. I had that, and it was gone way quicker than 6 months, you know? And so we don't want to be in a position where we're just so financially depleted if we don't have to be. So it doesn't matter what your income is. It doesn't matter what your job title or your role is. Ask for social services. Find out what resources are out there. And really begin to take assessment of like what your financial needs and burdens may be, because your physicians may not think about it, because our finances are not their responsibility, right? Physicians treat, physicians cure, physicians get us into remission. They have an agenda and a standard of care that they have to meet. Then we have our stuff. But we have to have realistic expectations, and we have to know where to get what from. So those kinds of resources we need to get from social services, and we need to get from our cancer support community and groups and things like that. And it's out there. But if you need a referral to a social worker, then definitely ask your physician for that. Because sometimes we just don't know. And a lot of times in the community, I hear people saying, my physician didn't do this. My physician never told me that. I'm like, well, but they're the doctor. They you know, they give you the cancer treatment. They give you the appropriate referrals, but they also are not mind readers, and they can't anticipate every single need. So if you have a need, you have to ask for it. But sometimes we don't know what we need until we're in the midst of it. And that's the importance and the value of being in community.
Yes. Well, I thank you so much, Dr. Alexia. I could be here all day.
Yeah, we could go on forever and ever.
We could go on forever. And it doesn't mean that you won't come back and you won't talk again with us on Mind Bloom. In fact, I would love to invite you as well for a live on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great idea that we could do that together. So I thank you so much, Dr. Alexia. Have a beautiful day, and please continue doing what you're doing. It's beautiful work.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you opening your platform to me to allow me to share my story, because I know that there is, you know, another woman or person, maybe even a man, my story will resonate with, either for them personally or someone that they know and love. And you know, the trickle down effect of sharing our stories is very real and very impactful. So I'm always grateful to just share, and I appreciate you for allowing me to do that.